There is a classic book review that is quoted very often that said that the book that was being reviewed had many things in it that were new and many things in it that were true. The problem was that none of the things that were new were true, which made the book entirely worthless because the new stuff was worthless. The old stuff, of course, was already to be found in other books. Well, what I have to offer you is always new, in the sense it's a new twist on facts you already know, or facts that are easily explained. But what I can't offer you is truth. Now, if you want to be a professional intellectual, you have to be able to demonstrate that everything you say is, in a sense, true. That is to say, it represents the latest thinking, the latest research in the field. So a professional scholar will provide you with endless footnotes. He will have read the literature in his field. He will answer the latest article in his field. And if you go back and look at professional scholars and what they were saying in the 1960s, it's really absurd. But these were professionals, they got paid for it, and they represented the current version of truth. What I present you with is some new twists on ideas, many of which are simply wrong. That's why I present them to you. I am not the voice of God. I am not even the voice of fashionable thought. What you have to do is take what I say and see whether it's true or not. But my obligation is to present a new twist on things. You don't make a living as an intellectual presenting new ideas or new twists. Most of your time will be spent finding out exactly where current thought is at this moment. In the 1960s, when I was in graduate school, one article in a Journal of Political Economy, was called How to Make a Burden Out of the Public Debt. And it ridiculed the idea that increasing the national debt was a problem. Well, at that time, of course, Republicans and conservatives were dedicated to not having an increase in the national debt. Liberals were dedicated to having an increase in the national debt. So academia was dedicated to the idea of proving liberals were right, which is pretty well what they have been devoted to for a couple of generations, which I explain in my book, Why Johnny Can't Think, America's Professor Priesthood. As I said there, if political correctness needs for frogs to have hooves, 1,000 professors will line up and say that frogs have hooves. So, what I am doing here is presenting new twists, and it is up to you to decide whether I'm right or not. And I don't have any problem with being wrong. I have always taken it for granted that truth is a very precious thing, by which I mean being right is a very precious thing. That is to say, the small t truth. Is it correct? Do you have your facts right? This is a very white attitude. Every other group of people on earth has always had a group of priests or wise men or elders who, when they were asked about why the sun shines or how the earth was invented, come up with a complete, total, absolute explanation. Only the white man has ever been really puzzled. One of the most incredible things about the ancient German religion of Wodenism, or Odinism in Scandinavian countries, was that Odin, the father god, hung on the world tree, Yggdrasil, in order to learn more facts. He lost an eye in that episode, not so he could learn eternal wisdom or the final truth, but so that he could learn some more factual information. This is absolutely unique among all the religions of the earth. In every other religion, the gods have the final truth, and the only reason that a person would be a philosopher is not to learn dirty old facts, but to learn wisdom. And the German language, like pretty well every Indo-European language, has a word for wisdom, Weisheit, and a word for knowledge, Kundschaft, in German. At least I think I'm pronouncing it right these days. But every Indo-European language has a word for wisdom and a word for knowledge, and knowledge is considered sort of low-grade and peasant-like. Every god and every philosopher and every professor begins with a full knowledge of the truth. Then he goes on to go after wisdom. That is one side. On the other side, most religions go further than that. They say their gods already know all the truths and everything there is to know. And your job is to listen to the priests. And if you don't attain both wisdom and the final answers to all questions, that's your fault. So Odinism was somewhat peasant-like in that it began with the assumption that we didn't know all the facts, and we're going to have to learn them, and even the Father God had to hang on the world tree in order to learn some more factual information. This is absolutely unique, all the way back to the African Bushmen, the Australian Bushmen. The gods taught you everything. They already knew everything. The only group that ever said that even the gods don't know everything were the Odinists. So the Father God hung on the world tree to learn some more facts, and this was impossible. In fact, I think I'm, for Westerners to understand, in fact, I think I'm the only person who has brought this up, that there's a difference between wisdom and knowledge. And in the more modest religions, all wisdom has not yet been learned, and so philosophers try to learn some wisdom. That's as modest as they get. In most religions, the gods already know everything. And if, as I say, if you don't, you're unable to figure out what they have to say, then that's your fault. Only Odinism came up with the idea, or took for granted the idea, that we don't know everything. And that is the way that Western science thinks today. That is the basis of Western science. It is the thought that lies at the basis of Western European thinking. It is not the product of Odin. Odin followed it. But if you want final truths, the old religion of my fathers isn't going to be able to give it to you, because truth is a precious thing. It is a small thing that you must learn, and it's painful. In order to learn it, you can go on the world tree, or you can be wrong a lot. You can be embarrassed a lot. But you have to state it, and you don't get to sit there like a wise man or a priest and insist on it. you have to be willing to accept it if the least of the peoples around you have proof to the contrary. One of the best examples is Aristotle's declaration that men are born with one more tooth than women are. Every college graduate believes that. Every university, every graduate, every person with pretensions to education, since he could read Greek, took it for granted for thousands of years that women were born to have one less tooth than men. And, of course, we don't laugh at them today because they were, after all, fluent in Latin and Greek. Whether they got their facts right or not was a very secondary consideration. Factual information to a white man is a precious thing. That is the precious thing. Other societies begin with it, and other societies end with their perfect wisdom. They carry the priest's perfect wisdom with them until their society collapses, and then another set of priests come up with a set of perfect facts that their priests pronounce. Now, what happened to those who stuck to my father's religion? They were burned alive. Karl Marx actually said one intelligent thing in his life. Marx pointed out that while Jews are always whining, and he was a Jew himself, of course, while Jews are always whining about how they're persecuted, the fact is that every other religion was destroyed by Christians. Jews were at least allowed to stay alive. They were not burned alive. They were discriminated against. Every other religion, including Protestantism in Catholic countries and Catholicism in Protestant countries, that was a death offense. Jews were allowed in all of those places. They were discriminated against, but the difference between sitting in the back of the bus and being burned alive is pretty substantial. Nobody notices this. When we talk about religious persecution, we're always talking about Jews. But Odinism was really intolerable because all through the history of the Christian church, there has been a guerrilla warfare going on against the ruling priesthood. People kept this disease wanting to know what was true, and they kept questioning the six-day creation, the idea that the earth was the center of the universe, and that all of the universe moved around it, and many other basic things that the priests, be they Catholic or Calvinist, always insisted were already settled. All the wisdom of the earth was already right there in the Bible. The Muslims added the Quran, and it's all right there in the Bible. And the priests already have it. Odinism had to be destroyed, but the Odinist spirit, the Odinist idea that the truth is not that easy to come by. The truth, the facts that you're building one by one on practicality, that is what is precious. Christianity can teach us how to be saved. And when Christianity first came to Northern Europe, The missionaries did not bring the 700,000 words or so of the Old Testament with them on scrolls that would have sunk their missionary boats. What they brought was the gospel of Jesus Christ. My kingdom is not of this earth. Faith in me. But once Christianity got to Northern Europe, then the hook in the bait was exposed, and the bishops started saying, "We know everything. You're not supposed to question, you're not supposed to learn. It's all right here." And when the Muslims poured in to invade with their absolute truth, the Christians managed to beat them back. But they did agree that all truth is already written down in those books. And that is something that pretty well every religion agrees on. Except the old white Western mind. And the white Western mind is cumulative. That is to say, the problem with having an absolute priesthood that knows everything is that when the next absolute priesthood that knows everything crushes it, it doesn't leave anything behind. This is a very important point of Chinese civilization. People love to prove that the Chinese invented this, that, and the other. But the simple fact is, none of those inventions made any difference in Chinese society. Yes, they had print. They printed some cards, playing cards, and the art sort of, they did have a movable type, but that kind of died out, and they stuck with the old unmovable type that sort of, that allowed them to make playing cards and so forth. Gunpowder never made any difference in Chinese civilization. The mechanical clock was, in fact, invented in China, at least in recorded history. Now, that's an important point right there, but the Chinese invented one Chinese invented the mechanical clock, but it disappeared completely from Chinese civilization. Western civilization, white civilization, is cumulative. That is to say, since we start with the assumption we don't know all truth, then we're willing to take in truths that are not produced by our priesthood. Therefore, Western white society is cumulative. Other societies are essentially a matter of conquest and just who the priests can force to believe. And of course, that disease was transferred to Western civilization when the Odinists, former Odinists, discovered that this Christianity, which had made so much sense when they were quoting Jesus, carried with it the entire weight of the Middle East, the idea that the earth was in the middle of the universe, that the world was created in 6 days, and so forth. And we're still living with that today. I have said, and I will say over and over, that everybody today is a white supremacist. Now, what I mean by that is, as a good example, the reason that historians get paid good money to go out and discover great black civilizations, the reason that historians get good money to go out and find Chinese inventions is in order to prove that other races could have done what the white man did. Well, if you're sitting around trying to prove that other races could have done what the white race has actually done, that is a better statement of white supremacy than was ever made by somebody in a robe burning a cross. That is white supremacy, raw. And that is what every person who tries to prove that non-white civilizations could have done what the white man did is a white supremacist. Now let me introduce one of those new ideas I was talking about that is new, but it may not be true. And that is that I am the only person you're going to listen to who is not a white supremacist. Not a white supremacist. Not that he says he's not a white supremacist. All the people who write about great African civilizations that could have done what the white man did, or great Asiatic civilizations and inventions that show that yellow people could have done what the white man did, are white supremacists. I am a white survivalist. That is to say, I believe that the white race has a unique purpose, a unique contribution to make in this world, and that it should survive. And that is the heresy of our day. Absolutely every other person you will hear, and everybody you will hear in the national media, insists that the white race must go. It must be destroyed. It must be genocided out of existence. There is a solution to the, quote, race problem. That race problem only exists in white majority countries. Every spokesman, liberal or conservative, who is allowed on the national media, insists that there must be massive third world immigration into all white countries, not into Japan, not into Taiwan, Africa for the Africans, Asia for the Asians. No, every white country must solve its, quote, race, unquote, problem by bringing in vast numbers of people from the third world and integrating with them, and genetically integrating with them, and becoming brown. There is absolutely not one single national spokesman who is allowed on national television or the national media whose thinking is not along these lines. Even Pat Buchanan had to say that he wasn't really against the end of the white race, but he wanted immigration slowed down so that this assimilation, as they call genocide, could take place more comfortably. But in order to be a national spokesman, you always have to agree that this race problem must be taken care of. Now this, quote, race, unquote, problem is the white problem. It doesn't take a whole lot of genius to figure that out. If someone said that all of certain countries must bring in people of another race and integrate with them, and that would solve the race problem, and they were referring to Jamaica, sub-Saharan Africa, and every other country that just happened to have an overwhelmingly black population, I think it would take anybody about 3 seconds to realize that that person was advocating genocide against the black race. So let's not be absolutely stupid here. People who are out to solve the race problem by assimilation demand that the white race go. It doesn't matter whether they demand it loudly or whether they say in good time or whatever. Let's not be naive. They're saying the white race has to go. Anti-racism is anti-white. It's simply a code word for anti-white. What I am saying is that in the world I live in, everybody wants to get rid of the white race. I object to that. I think that, first of all, as a matter of common decency, of course, you don't wipe out a race of people. But let's forget common decency, and that is what liberals and respectable conservatives start by doing. I also believe that the white race has a particular contribution to make. And the other races do, but they need the white race to make it. For example, people always talk about this wonderful sense of rhythm that black people have. Well, it happens to be true. If you've ever listened to a jazz band in New Orleans, you will never get over the idea that black people have a very special sense of rhythm. They're sitting around and we learn from them, but they are able to just, in a jam session, just put together music that has never been written down or anything else and will never be played again. Now, the black race had this wonderful sense of rhythm for eons, but all they had to express it on was a drum. And it wasn't a very good drum. Then, the black race met the white man's instruments and counterpoint and some of the other white ideas, and an explosion occurred. And for all the talk about great black civilizations and all that, I'll tell you something that we all know. For all the business of going back to Africa and back to the great African civilizations, if you're going to take those instruments away from black people today, you're going to have to get it out of their cold, dead hand because they're not going to give it up. The black race has found a way to express their spirit and their soul in the white man's instruments that the white man developed. That's not particularly embarrassing to either group. The Chinese or the Orientals, in general, when we think of Oriental civilization, we think of the rice paddy culture. Well, it is a long way from wild rice, which grows on dry soil, to the rice that the Chinese grow in the paddies. And then I was raised down in South Carolina. Some of those aquatic, it's called aquatic rice, water rice. So like hydroponics, the yield is fantastic. Huge yield and repeated yields from the same soil. You can build whole civilizations on it, and that is what the Orient has done. But they got aquatic rice from India when India was still ruled by very white people, the Buddha. Gautama Buddha had, as they say, eyes the color, as blue as the lotus. And a lot of the Indians that the Chinese got many of their ideas and concepts from were of the Indo-European group, the same group I come from, in India. They just immigrated the other way. But the point is that the Chinese don't want to give up rice or the paddy culture that they developed. The Chinese have a talent. The Orientals, in general, seem to have a talent for being organized the way that black people have a talent, one of many, for rhythm. But it took the white man's touch, the white man's inventions, for them to express those things. Now, what exactly is wrong with that? What exactly is wrong with the white race having a unique contribution that should continue? What is wrong with other races taking what we did and fulfilling themselves with it? I would think that that's a pretty good concept for the world. Well, no. That's Nazism. If you say that, you're a Nazi. A Nazi wants to kill 6 million Jews. We've all heard that one. That's why nobody's going to listen to what I say, because I'm a racist. I'm a white supremacist, because I think the white race has a very special contribution to make. I think that contribution can be used by other races. Unlike most of the people who are talking about diversity, I actually believe in it. I believe in a diversity of ideas, a diversity of races, a diversity of cultures. And the people who talk about diversity invariably talk about one universal diversity, which is kind of funny, but that's really what they're talking about. All white countries will be brown, and eventually the whole world will be one race, one brown melting pot color. That's not diversity, gang. There are two widely separated mottos that every human being has a, you might say, a natural affinity for. One is the old Roman motto, divide and conquer. If you can take the different races and make them declare that any white person who wants his race to survive is a racist, it won't end there. They'll be after you, eventually, no matter what color you are. Another motto that's more recent is the motto that was written by Sauron, the evil one, in The Lord of the Rings. It was written on the Great Ring, the evil ring, the one with which Sauron was going to capture the world. Now here is the quote from that ring. One ring to rule them all, one ring to find them, one ring to bring them all, and in the darkness bind them. That gives most people a cold chill when they read it in The Lord of the Rings. But they don't realize that that is what diversity, the motto of diversity, straight genocide against the white race, it's part of a total mentality. It's not a plot, it's just a mentality that all of these universal philosophies, all of these priests of various sorts, whether they call themselves professors or priests or Marxists, they want to rule the whole world as one solid melting pot mass. And that is what they call diversity. The Inquisition used to call burning people alive slowly, they used to call it mercy. That may sound a little odd to us today. They took it perfectly seriously, because they would burn someone slowly alive, stick a cross. The Inquisitor would stand there with a cross, a long cross, so he wouldn't get burned, in the victim's face, because what he wanted to do was to get the victim to confess his sins and avoid the eternal fire. This was mercy. It's pretty routine for people who are fighting for tyranny to use the word freedom. Stalin used it all the time. Economic democracy, the communists used that word all the time. That's pretty routine. This so-called diversity means the opposite of what it says, but that's not unusual. People say it's even the ones who catch on to it and realize it think that it's something special. It's not. People always use words like education when they really mean indoctrination. It's the opposite of education. This is not unusual, as I point out in Why Johnny Can't Thank America's Professor Priesthood. If you want a copy of it, it's at readbob.com. But I keep pointing out that it is routine for people to use the word for what they're actually trying to destroy as their mantra. The person who's always talking about liars, liars, liars is invariably himself someone whose word is not to be trusted. Now, that's just practical politics. If somebody keeps saying liar, you better stay away from him. I cannot believe that anybody can reach the age of 20 without knowing that the person who uses the sweetest words is often the one who is going to get you. Same thing is true of diversity. It turns out that some of my best fans, as far as my book is concerned, are black people. I'm down here in South Carolina, and I freely give them my book to read. Some of them actually buy it. That's not that true of white people or anybody else. But all I have gotten, even though a lot of people disagree with what I say, they're supposed to. I don't want a bunch of people to think that Bob the God is speaking here. But while they will disagree, common sense people tend to agree with common sense. And people say, but Bob, you keep talking about survival of the white race in there. Don't black people get upset? And I say, you know, get down to earth, man. This is a white man writing this book. He's worried about white people. Black guy reading it, he says, so what else is new? He's white, he worries about white people. Gosh, what a surprise. But my usual response is, from whites or blacks who have not gone to college, will be they're a little bit surprised, although they don't put it that way to my face, that somebody with as much education as I have and all these professional qualifications can simply talk common sense. So in the world we live in, I believe that the person who talks about diversity is actually aiming at the exact opposite. He wants no diversity of opinion. In fact, he says, well, we've got to overcome race and culture and have one ideal, and he's more than happy to tell you what that ideal is. He may be a Marxist, call himself Christian, whatever it is, he has his own, quote, ideal, unquote, that he wants everybody to be forced to believe. He wants one race, one brown race around the world. He wants one culture, I call it the multiculture, around the world. He wants one belief around the world. One ring to bind them. One ring to find them all and in the darkness bind them. And while that's poetic, the average person who really appreciates my writing is not that poetic. He's just got an awful lot of common sense. He knows that the person who screams diversity all the time is probably a deadly enemy of diversity. He understands they have an agenda. And what I'm talking is common sense. One part of that common sense is, I'm a white man, I'm a white Gentile, I think my race has a right to survive. If my race doesn't have a right to survive, then your race is not going to have a right to survive. I think that it doesn't really matter whether you identify with a race or a culture. This multiculture is going to destroy your culture, it's going to destroy your race, it's going to destroy your religion, because it is seeking to, in the darkness, bind them. It's seeking to enforce one idea, create one race, and when you do that, I don't care what the name of your particular idealism is, when you do that, it's a tyranny. You're bound in the darkness.